this and it'll start recording. And then you press that to stop it. This and see all the numbers are moving.
So now the numbers recording. Are moving. So and if the numbers stop moving, I have to get worried.
Yeah. Well, hopefully not. The battery should last. It's a nice bowl.
Thank you. Yes, it is. Yeah. I tried to use that Bing Gong last time, and I'm clearly not qualified for it, so.
They'll come out in a few minutes. They're going to hang out in case somebody shows, and then they'll come back.
Who's that?
Taruko and David and
Zoe. So, should we start then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Let's do prayers, starting on page 3. Teacher, foe destroyer, thus gone, fully and perfectly awakened Buddha, endowed with knowledge and good conduct, gone to bliss, knower of the world, helmsman of ordinary beings to be tamed, supreme one, teacher of all gods and men, Buddha, foe destroyer, glorious victorious one, Shakyamuni, to you I pay homage, make offerings, and go for refuge. Teacher, foe destroyer, thus gone, fully and perfectly awakened Buddha, endowed with knowledge and good conduct, gone to bliss, knower of the world, helmsman of ordinary beings to be tamed, supreme one, teacher of all gods and men, Buddha, foe destroyer, glorious victorious one, Shakyamuni, to you I pay homage, make offerings, and go for refuge. Teacher, foe destroyer, thus gone, fully and perfectly awakened Buddha, endowed with knowledge and good conduct, gone to bliss, knower of the world, helmsman of ordinary beings to be tamed, supreme one, teacher of all gods and men, Buddha, foe destroyer, glorious victorious one, Shakyamuni, to you I pay homage, make offerings, and go for refuge. When you, chief of humans, were born, you took 7 steps on this great earth, and you said, I am supreme in this world. To you who were wise at that time, I prostrate. Completely pure body, supremely fine form, ocean of wisdom like a golden mountain, fame that blazes in the 3 worlds, supreme protector, to you I prostrate. Endowed with the 3 marks, a face like the stainless moon, a color like gold, to you I pay homage. The 3 worlds are not like you, who is free from dust, matchless one, endowed with knowledge, to you I prostrate. Protector, endowed with great compassion, omniscient teacher, field of ocean-like merits and good qualities, to the thus gone I prostrate. Through purity, free from attachment, through virtue, releases from the evil gone realms, unique, supreme, ultimate meaning, to the Dharma that brings peace, I prostrate. From freedom, teaching the path, well abiding in the pure trainings, holy field endowed with good qualities, to the Sangha also I prostrate. Homage to the Supreme Buddha, homage to the Dharma refuge, homage to the great Sangha, to all 3 ever devout homage. To all worthy of respect, bowing with bodies as many as all realms, atoms, and all aspects, with supreme faith I pay homage. Do not commit any non-virtuous actions. Accumulate virtue and goodness. Subdue your own mind. This is the teaching of the Buddha. Like a star, a mirage, a lamp, illusions, drops of dew, bubbles, dreams, lightning, and clouds. Look at all conditioned phenomena as such. Due to this merit, having attained the state of the all-seeing, and thereby subduing the enemy of faults, may I liberate migrators from the ocean of existence, stirred by the waves of aging, sickness, and death. I take refuge in the Guru. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Guru. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Guru. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge until I am enlightened in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. By the positive potential I create by listening to the Dharma, may I attain Buddhahood to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the joyful happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from holding some close and others distant. Respectfully, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I confess all my negative actions accumulated since beginningless time, and rejoice in the virtuous actions of all ordinary and noble beings. Please, Buddha, remain as our guide, and turn the wheel of Dharma until samsara ends. Through the merit created by myself and others, may the two bodhicittas ripen, and may I attain Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings. This offering I make of a precious jeweled mandala, together with other pure offerings and wealth, and the virtues we have collected throughout the three times with our body, speech, and mind. O my masters, my Yidams, in the three precious jewels, I offer all to you in unwavering faith. Accepting these out of your boundless compassion, please send forth waves of your blessings. Yidam Guru Ratna Mandala Kam Narati. And then we'll read the Heart of Perfection of Wisdom Sutra starting on page 10. I prostrate to the Arya Triple Gem. Thus did I hear at one time the Bhagavan was dwelling on Massa Vultures Mountain on Rajagira, together with a great community of monks and a great community of bodhisattvas. At that time, the Bhagavan was absorbed in the concentration on the categories of phenomena called profound perception. Also at that time, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Avalokiteshvara looked upon the very practice of the profound perfection of wisdom, and beheld those five aggregates also as empty of inherent nature. Then through the power of Buddha, the Venerable Shariputra said this to the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Avalokiteshvara: how should any son of the lineage train who wishes to practice the activity of the profound perfection of wisdom? He said that, and the Bodhisattva, Mahasattva, Arya, Avalokiteshvara, said this to the Venerable Sharivadiputra: Shariputra, any son of the lineage, or daughter of the lineage, who wishes to practice the activity of the profound perfection of wisdom, should look upon it like this: correctly and repeatedly beholding those five aggregates also as empty of inherent nature. Form is empty. Emptiness is form. Emptiness is not other than form. Form is also not other than emptiness. In the same way, feeling, discrimination, compositional factors, and consciousness are empty. Shariputra, likewise, all phenomena are emptiness, without characteristic, unproduced, unceased, stainless, not without stain, not deficient, not fulfilled. Shariputra, therefore, in emptiness there is no form, no feeling, no discrimination, no compositional factors, no consciousness, no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no visual form, no sound, no odor, no taste, no object of touch, and no phenomenon. There is no I element, and so on, and up to, including no mind element, and no mental consciousness element. There is no ignorance, no extinction of ignorance, and so on, and up to, and including no aging and death, and no extinction of aging and death. Similarly, there is no suffering, origination, cessation, and impact. There is no exalted wisdom, no attainment, and also no non-attainment. Shariputra, therefore, because there is no attainment, bodhisattvas rely on and dwell in the perfection of wisdom, the mind without obscuration and without fear. Having completely passed beyond error, they reach the end point of nirvana. All the Buddhas who dwell in the three times also manifestly, completely awaken to unsurpassable, perfect, complete enlightenment in the reliance on the perfection of wisdom. Therefore, the mantra of the perfection of wisdom, the mantra of great knowledge,
the unsurpassed mantra, the mantra equal to the unequaled, the mantra that thoroughly pacifies all suffering, should be known as the truth, since it is not false. The mantra of the perfection of wisdom is declared, Tayata, gate, gate, paragate, parasamgate, bodhisoha. Tayata, gate, gate, paragate, parasamgate, bodhisoha. Shariputra, the bodhisattva, mahasattva, should train in the profound perfection of wisdom like that. Then the Bhagavan arose from that concentration and commended the bodhisattva, mahasattva, Arya, Avalokiteshvara, saying, well said, son of the lineage, it is like that, it is like that. One should practice the profound perfection of wisdom, just as you have indicated, even the Tathagatas rejoice. The Bhagavan having thus spoken, the venerable Sharivadiputra, the Bodhisattva, Mahasattva, Arya, Avalokiteshvara, those surrounding in their entirety, along with the world of gods, humans, asuras, Gandharas, were overjoyed and highly praised as spoken by the Bhagavan.
Welcome. Thanks for coming. And I think there maybe are a couple people that are new. My name's Ellen, if you don't know me. So maybe we can just take a minute, take a deep breath, and arrive, whatever it took for you to get here today. So I was going to talk this morning about mind training. How many people were here for Kongsar Rinpoche's talk 2 weeks ago? Okay, some of you. So I left that talk very inspired. I thought he was a very charismatic person. But I also left feeling like it's the things he suggested we do, it's a little bit easy for him to say and hard for me to do. So I titled this talk Mind Training for Normal People. And I wanted to call it Mind Training for Dummies, but I didn't think Lamala would let that one necessarily get onto the Facebook page. So but you know, in the theme of all the other dummies books, not really dummies, just normal people like us in our lives. So I'll talk a little bit about that and some of the things that he said and why, at least for me, they feel difficult and why some of the commentaries say that the reasons are that they feel so difficult to do sometimes. And we'll do a little sitting meditation in the middle of that and then take a short break and talk a bit more, and then we actually even have a movie. So it was a short movie clip, so should hopefully be a enjoyable morning. So Kongsar Rinpoche, I thought he was very charismatic, and I enjoyed especially his humor and very articulate, and it was just so nice to be here with him. And he talked about the first three parts of mind training, the first three sort of qualities. And the way he characterized them were drop negative thoughts, cherish people, and drop the why me attitude. So again, it sounded so simple, actually, but I kind of felt like, oh, you know, it's easy for you to say and hard for me to do. So we'll talk a little bit about why that is. And the general theme of these Sunday talks is the Bodhisattva path. And mind training connects very well with the Bodhisattva path. It's all about sort of heart-opening practices, at least from my perspective. And Chogyam Trungpa, who's written a lot about mind training, wrote a little bit that sort of connects these for me. He wrote, in the Mahayana tradition, we experience a sense of gentleness towards ourselves, and a sense of friendliness towards others begins to arise from that. The friendliness or compassion is known in Tibetan as Ningje, which literally means noble heart. We are willing to commit ourselves to working with all sentient beings, but before we actually launch into that project, we first need a lot of training, as in training the mind. And he writes that the Hinayana tradition is more about taming the mind, you know, settling ourselves down. But the Mahayana tradition, we begin to talk about training the mind, and a big part of that is so that you can relate to others on the Bodhisattva path. So I think that's pretty cool. And just a bit about the lineage connection of the 7-point mind training. I always try to connect these things back to where they came from.
And so the 7-point mind training is about 1,000 years old. And when I hear about these trainings, sometimes I think they were like prehistoric ages or something. They seem so far out of my realm of comprehension in terms of my life. But I started thinking about this. My father, who died about 2005, if he was alive today, he'd be almost 100 years old. So one father-daughter episode covers 1/10 of that. So it's really like 10 father-daughter episodes, and we're back to when this 7-point mind training happened. So it really wasn't all that long ago, if you think generations. You know, so it's pretty neat. And it's traced back to Atisha, and he received the teachings from a person named Sir Lingpa. But Atisha is really attributed with the trainings, really talking about them a lot. And they were passed down to Chikawa, who was the first one known to have actually written them down. So but before that time, it was just all oral transmission. The writing them down started making them able to be disseminated more. And that oral tradition then continued over these centuries. Chogyam Trungpa was one of the first ones to come from the east to the west and bring these teachings. And he was a teacher of Lama Jinpa. And Alan Wallace, who also we read a lot of his material, and I've never seen him, but maybe some of you have seen him or at least heard of him, he also is very well known. He studied in the east and brought the mind training to the west and wrote commentaries based on other commentaries that had never been translated to English. So these people that basically have been alive in most of our lifetimes are the first ones. And then Lama Jinpa is really the first Tibetan master that's come to Sacramento and spent a significant amount of time teaching. So in a way, it's almost like we're leading edge here in Sacramento with these mind trainings. It's not that far away. So it's pretty neat, I think. So did anybody go and look up the 7-point mind trainings either before or after Kenzin Rinpoche came? You did, yeah. I did too, and I think one word of caution, the mind trainings, they're so broken down and they have these things called slogans, and there are either 7 of them or a few, like 3 or 4 more times that, depending on how you look at it. But it can be a little bit tricky because the slogans or the little pith instructions are just that, they're pith instructions. And really if you read them, a normal person, they don't really make any sense. I mean, they can't literally translate them to something that's particularly meaningful. And it can be a bit of a trap in a way, but what they're really meant to do is somebody that studied one of these commentaries or studied with one of these lineage people that know their stuff really well, after they've done all that study, then they have these little slogans and it reminds them of what it really means. Yeah.
Can you give us an example of one of those slogans?
Well, I mean, we have 3 examples in front of us. Drop negative thoughts. Okay, easy, done. Whew, we can go home. But what does it really mean? Or another one that we'll talk about today, drive all blames into one. If you read that literally or hear it literally, and especially if you think you're the one, it's like, what the heck? You know, I'm to be blamed for everything? It doesn't really give you the gist of what it's about. So, I mean, once you study what it's about and then you get that in your mind and you go, oh, okay, I get what I'm supposed to do, then that little reminder can be a handy reminder. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's probably good that a lot of you didn't go read those slogans because it doesn't, in my opinion, it doesn't really make it that much easier if we haven't studied the information in detail. So if you weren't here for Kongzo Rinpoche's talk, I mentioned 3 things that he talked about. Dropping negative thoughts, which is really one of the kind of early parts of the mind training preliminary practices. And it's really the part to kind of calm us down. And then cherishing others, you know, really seeing them as valuable, compassion. That don't make sense. We want to be able to do that. And then dropping the why me attitude. You know, like why me? Poor little pitiful me. What's going on in my life? Why are all these circumstances lining up against me? And that's likened to this driving all blames into one, like really looking at our sense of blaming. So what makes it difficult? Kangsar Rinpoche, I think, you know, his message to me was it had this such lightness. It was kind of like, just do it. You know, like the Nike commercial, just do it. Which is, okay, great, but it's not that great to be a superstar for Nike Athletics either. But the beauty of the 7-point mind training is it recognizes that we already have everything we need, really. it sort of recognizes this inner greatness, this inner enlightenment that's already there. So it's nice in that way because it recognizes us all as whole and complete already. And what that enables is we don't have to really go anywhere or do anything to be able to practice and give these benefits out to the world. But what makes it hard is we think we have all these problems, right? We have all these issues, right? I'm too tired today. If I wasn't so messed up, I could be a good person. Or I'm just like got all these things in my head. How can I possibly meditate? Or my partner just left me. How can I, I just feel so shut down. We have all these things that we think we need to fix, all this baggage that we need to take care of. But the nice thing about the mind training is it recognizes the inner goodness, and it just sees all those things as sort of like clouds that block the sun. They're just clouds. It doesn't mean that there's no sun. It doesn't mean that we're inherently broken. It recognizes that we're inherently okay, and we have these things, we have these issues and this baggage. And in fact, it says that baggage and those issues that really are the wealth of the mind training, because it lets us get in touch with them, and it lets us get in touch with our humanity. So that's what's really special about it, is we tend to try to like wait till they're all fixed before we go out and help people. But that's like exactly opposite of what the mind training is about. Looking at ourselves as being whole and complete and enlightened and pure and perfect is not the way we usually habitually do things. We're usually like, oh man, I'm so messed up, or I got all these problems, or I know when I first started coming to Lion's Roar, I really had a genuine desire, and I think a lot of people that do, to help people. I wanted to be there for people. I've always, since I was a kid, wanted to go save the world, trying to figure out how to do that. But the time that I started coming, it was like, oh my God, I feel like I'm so messed up. I just got to get myself in order first, and I'm going to come to this place because I hope I can get myself straightened out, and then get some of this whatever's going on with me, my stuff together, I'll be available. And that was my hope, is that I would, come out of all my crap and then be available to the world. But the 7-point mind training lets us actually use that stuff to help us. You don't have to wait until it's all gone. So it's kind of cool. In fact, you can feel like you're like the world's most helpless basket case and you can still practice. I mean, that's pretty neat. Again, dropping our negative thoughts is a bit of a slogan or mnemonic, because you can start exactly where you are with all these negative thoughts, right? You don't have to wait to drop them to be doing it right. And it's actually getting in touch with those negative things that lets us get in touch with our own, like I said, our own humanity, our own suffering, our own problems, and lets us be available then for other people to see it in them. So it's kind of special that way. And so if we don't have to fix things first, we don't have to wait to start having compassion for other people. We can actually use those problems in ourselves, those triggers, as a way to connect with other people. And so to the extent we get to know our own personal suffering around it, we can really connect with others and them, their suffering. But it's not necessarily easy. Right? It takes some work. It takes some practice to be able to do that and to be able to be willing to experience those things and acknowledge those things in ourselves. And I think that even the label mind training is a little misnomer, at least to us in the West. I know when I started, and for years and years, I still get tripped up on this, when I hear something like mind training, I think intellect. When I hear mind, I think head. You got to keep in mind, this came from the East, and they don't think head so much when they think mind. It's really like heart and soul. So I think it should be called the heart practices or something like that, because we think of it as a real technical, difficult thing, but it's not like that at all. In fact, the more we try to figure it out, the worse it is. It's more, think of it as the 7 heart trainings, and I think it's a little bit easier to think of that way. So Shamatha Vipassana meditation is really what there is to do in the dropping the negative thoughts part of it, and being aware with the breath and trying to stay aware. And you might notice different sounds or different sensations. But the challenge is that we, you know, these thoughts come into our head. Oh, okay, yeah, it's nice here today, but I wish I would have eaten a little more breakfast, or I wonder if they'll have snacks, or, you know, we get going on these thoughts, and then we think, oh, man, here I am, like, thinking, what's up with me? I should be not thinking. I'm so lame. Why am I even here? You know, we get in this whole spinny thing. But in the shamatha vipassana training, you can just label, you know, be with it, notice the thoughts. That's kind of the shamatha part of it. Try to calm the body. And then notice the thoughts, and you can just maybe label them thinking. Now, that's the vipassana part, to notice it, thinking. And we don't have to get a whole big story about it. We can be really gentle and really compassionate with ourselves when the thoughts come up. Oh, thinking. And then the real benefit in the meditation is going back then from the thought to the object, whether it's the breath or the body or what have you. So just being so gentle with, oh, thought, thinking, you know, like it's no big deal. And in a way, that's what we mean by dropping the negative thoughts. It's not like really that they go. It's just that we treat them with such a compassionate, light touch and go back to the experience of the breath. So I told a couple of you that I was in San Francisco the last couple of days, and I had an experience there that kind of reminded me of this light touch. I was doing this public transportation thing, as I was describing to some of you, and I decided to set the roller bag aside and take like a big day pack, because I was going to go from hotel to venue to Uber to bus to train, and I thought I'm just going to be mobile. So I took this day pack and rolled up all my nice leisure suits and whatnot. And the second day I was checking out, I was helping facilitate a workshop in the Presidio, and it was beautiful. You know, it was kind of rainy on Thursday and Friday, at least there, and then it was foggy. And I stayed about a mile away in a hotel, but I got to walk through the Presidio to the place I was going. And I was walking down this Lover's Lane. If you've ever been there, there's a little path called Lover's Lane. And I guess the name came to be because the soldiers would come back from war through the harbor, and then they'd walk up that lane to meet their loved ones. So, I mean, thinking about all this and then going with these eucalyptus trees and the fog. So the second day I checked out of my hotel because I was going to do this mad dash to the, you know, venue, to Uber and all whatnot. And I had this big backpack on. And so has anybody ever backpacked? Yeah? Or if you haven't backpacked, have you ever wear one of those big garden blowers with a heavy, you know, or maybe had a kid on your shoulders? The thing about backpacking is you put this pack on and you go, not so fast, leisurely stroll, but you go for a couple hours, and then you take that backpack off. I encourage you guys to load up a day pack or something and do this if you never have. You take that backpack off. It is literally like you're levitating. You know, it's like such a weird feeling because you feel the anti-gravity. You know, you feel so light. And I think this labeling our thoughts, thinking, and our meditation is kind of like that. It's kind of like, you know, it's just like a break. Give yourself a break. I mean, it's no big deal that you have these thoughts. It's very normal. So you could think of that, and if you want to go put the bricks in the day pack and wander around sometime. We'll do a practice in a bit, but I wanted to read from another teacher, a student of Shogam Trungpa's, Pema Chodron. So I don't know if there are any Pema Chodron fans in here, but she does a good job of translating some of this stuff to just normal speak. So this is from her book, Start Where You Are, which is about 7-point mind training, but again, for like, just you don't have to be a pro to do this sort of stuff. Okay. So I'm going to read 3 or 4 pages. The instruction is that when you realize you've been thinking, you label it thinking. When your mind wanders off, you say to yourself, thinking. Whether your thoughts are violent or passionate or full of ignorance and denial, whether your thoughts are worried or fearful, whether your thoughts are spiritual thoughts, pleasing thoughts of how well you're doing, comforting thoughts, uplifting thoughts, whatever they are, without judgment or harshness, simply label it all thinking. And do that with honesty and gentleness. The touch on the breath is light. Only about 25% of the awareness is on the breath. You're not grasping or fixating on it. You're opening, letting the breath mix with the space of the room, letting your breath just go out into space. Then there's something like a pause, a gap,
until the next breath goes out again. And while you're breathing in, there could be some sense of just opening and waiting. It's like pushing the doorbell and waiting for someone to answer. Then you push the doorbell again and wait for someone to answer. Then probably your mind wanders off and you realize you're thinking again. At this point, you use the labeling technique. It's important to be faithful to the technique. If you find that your labeling is harsh or has a negative tone to it, as if you're saying, "Damn it," that you're giving yourself a hard time, say it again and lighten up. It's not like trying to down the thoughts as if they were clay pigeons. Does everybody know what a clay pigeon is? A pigeon go up in the air and you psh, 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 you have to shoot it out of the air. So it's not like that. Instead, be gentle. Use the labeling part of the technique as an opportunity to develop softness and compassion for yourself. Anything that comes up is okay in the arena of meditation. The point is you can see it honestly and make friends with it. Although it's embarrassing and painful, it's very healing to stop hiding from yourself. It's healing to know all the ways you're sneaky, all the ways you hide out and all the ways you shut down, deny, close off, criticize people, all your weird little ways. You can know all that with some sense of humor and kindness. We're all up against these things. We are all in this together. So when you realize that you're talking to yourself, label it thinking and notice the tone of your voice. Let it be compassionate and gentle and humorous. Then you'll be changing old stuck patterns that are shared by the whole human race. Compassion for others begins with kindness for ourselves. The basic notion of mind training is that we can make friends with all that we reject, what we see as bad in ourselves and in other people. At the same time, we could learn to be generous with what we cherish, what we see as good. If we begin to live this way, something in us that may have been buried for a long time begins to ripen. Traditionally, this something is called bodhicitta, or awakened heart. It is something that we already have but have usually not discovered. It's as if we're poor, homeless, hungry and cold, and although we didn't know it, right under the ground where we've always slept was a pot of gold, and that gold is bodhicitta. Our confusion and misery come from not knowing that the gold is right there and from always looking for it somewhere else. When we talk about joy, enlightenment, waking up, or awakened bodhicitta, all that means is that we know the gold is right here and we realize it's been here all the time. The basic message of the mind training teachings is that if it's painful, you can learn to hold your seat and move closer to that pain. Go against the grain and hold your seat. Mind training introduces a different attitude towards unwanted stuff. If it's painful, you become willing not just to endure it, but also to let it awaken your heart and soften you. You learn to embrace it. If an experience is delightful or pleasant, usually when we want to grab it and make it last, we're afraid that it will end, and we're not inclined to share it. The mind training teachings encourage us, if we want to enjoy what we're experiencing, to think of other people and wish for them to feel that. Share the wealth. Be generous with your joy. Give away what you most want. Be generous with your insights and delights. Instead of fearing that they're going to slip away and holding on to them, share them. Whether it's pain or pleasure, through mind training practice, we come to have a sense of letting our experience be as it is without trying to manipulate it, push it away, or grasp it. The pleasurable aspects of being human, as well as the painful ones, become the key to awakening bodhicitta. There is a saying that is the underlying principle of the practice. Gain and victory to others, loss and defeat to myself. In essence, what this little saying is getting at is that words like victory and defeat are completely interwoven with how we protect ourselves and how we guard our hearts. Our sense of victory just means that we guarded our heart enough so that nothing got through, and we think that we won the war. The armor around our soft spot, our wounded heart, is now more fortified, and our world is smaller.
Maybe nothing is getting in to scare us for one whole week, but our courage is weakening, and our sense of caring about others is getting completely obscured. Did we really win the war? On the other hand, our sense of being defeated means something got in, something touched our soft spot. This vulnerability that we've kept armored for ages, something touched it. Maybe all that touched it was a butterfly, but we've never been touched there before. It was so tender. Because we've never felt that before, we now go out and buy padlocks and armor and guns so that we will never feel it again. We go for anything, 7 pair of boots that fit inside each other so we don't have to feel the ground, and 12 masks so that no one can see our real face, and 19 sets of armor so that nothing can touch our skin, let alone our heart. These words, defeat and victory, are so tied up with how we stay imprisoned. The real confusion is caused by not knowing that we have limitless wealth, and that the confusion deepens every time you buy into this win-lose logic. If you touch me, that's defeat. If I manage to armor myself and not be touched, that's victory. Realizing our wealth would end our bewilderment and confusion. But the only way to do that is to let things fall apart. And that's the very thing that we dread the most, the ultimate defeat. Yet letting things fall apart would actually let fresh air into this old, stale basement of a heart that we've got. Saying loss and defeat to myself doesn't mean to become a masochist. What it means is that you can open your heart and your mind and know what defeat feels like. You feel short, you have indigestion, you're too fat, too stupid. You say to yourself, nobody loves me, I'm always left out, I have no teeth, my hair's getting gray, I have blotchy skin and my nose runs. That all comes under the category of defeat, and defeat of the ego. We're always not wanting to be who we are. However, we can never connect with our fundamental wealth as long as we're buying into this advertisement hype that we have to be somebody else, that we have to smell different or to look different. On the other hand, when you say victory to others, instead of wanting to keep it for yourself, there's the sense of sharing the whole delightful aspect of your life. You did lose some weight. You do like the way you look in the mirror. You suddenly feel like you have a nice voice, or someone falls in love with you, or you fall in love with someone else, or seasons change and it touches your heart, or you begin to notice the snow, or the way the trees move in the wind. With anything you want, you begin to develop the attitude of wanting to share it instead of being so stingy with it or fearful. So the training is about how to relate with pain and fear and pleasure and joy, and how those things can transform us fully and completely. With this training, then, ordinary life begins the path of awakening. Okay, so are you inspired to give it a try? I'm going to do a meditation for about 10 minutes or so, and I'll guide you a little bit. I'm going to talk about noticing your breath and your thoughts. Yeah, if you want to get a cushion or... So I'll talk in the first part, and then we'll have some time of just practicing. So you want to get comfortable in your seat and have a posture where you can breathe, you know, and you're not too uptight. You're relaxed, but not too relaxed. Maybe we'll just all take a deep breath in and then let it go. So bring some gentleness to yourself and to your meditation. Gentleness in our practice and our life helps us awaken the bodhicitta. Sitting here, being gentle with ourselves, we're rediscovering something. It's like a mother reuniting with her child. Having been lost to each other for a long time, they reunite. Let your whole practice be extremely gentle. Breathing out, touch your breath as it goes. Let that be like relaxing out. Sense the breath going out into big space, dissolving into space. And you may have thoughts come up. Just tell yourself, thinking in an extremely gentle way. Regard the thoughts as bubbles and the labeling as thinking, like touching them with a feather. Just this light touch, thinking, and they dissolve back into space. Don't worry about achieving. Don't worry about perfection. Just be here in each moment as best you can. When you realize you've wandered off again, simply very gently acknowledge that. This light touch is the key to reuniting with your openness. Wherever you find yourself, just relax. Relax your shoulders. Relax your stomach. Relax your heart. Relax your mind. Bring in as much gentleness as you can. Now just practice on your own for a few minutes. How about we do a 10-minute stretch break, bathroom break, and then we'll come back and do a little discussion and then have one more little topic and then the feature film.
The feature.
Focus. Shit, you can't do it.
Watch out, we have pure people present.
This really helped me, like the gentleness aspect, the friendliness aspect, and it helped me relax. And so I just wanted to thank you for that part. That's a helpful development in my practice, is to take a more gentle idea as opposed to this very, because I have such trouble focusing, it opens it up.
Mm. Yeah, please.
I appreciate the gentle word. Too, because, and my name's Ben, so it's a gentle Ben.
Oh.
And it makes me laugh, and that's helpful. But it's, I always am calming myself down and trying to be gentle, and I say gentle, you know, when I'm putting things down, or as if I treat everything like it's valuable when I start to get in a hurry with it, because things break when you get in a hurry, or I don't know, I have problems, you know, when I start to go faster than I'm going, I guess. And so gentle is a good calming down reminder word. And so it was nice to hear it in your talk today. So,
Yeah.
I kind of focused on the goodness. It was nice to hear that and be reminded again that my goodness is indestructible. I can't find it if I look. And that's something Lama had given me many months ago. And I had forgotten. So,
don't
no, gentle, not because you'll have that one. Anyway, it was a wonderful focus. So I was focusing on that in my meditation, and it was very helpful.
Yeah, Rudy, did you?
And since I've been coming here, sharing it with you just earlier, it's like I've been opening up in my heart and getting out of my mind and getting more to my heart. And it's, I've closed my heart off for so many years, and since I've been coming here, I've just released a lot of whatever, like your backpack, and just allowed my heart to really express itself, and it's just been really great.
It's great. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, go ahead.
I appreciate the reminders about you don't have to like slump up a lot before you get to that table. Okay. So in meditation I had I don't know what they're called, maybe some of you know, the scientists, but
Andrew?
Speak up.
Sorry, I have a soft voice. When you're like you see like a stream or something, you see these little bugs that just like you know, like have four legs, they're like
water striders?
So I kind of imagined, here's a thunder. Jump off the
nice. Yeah.
I really liked all the images, I think, from the reading of what we do to avoid being vulnerable and open. And